From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 347, recorded live Thursday, November 22nd, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks to Zachary Pinter from Hulu about the new Hulu Windows 8 application.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm recording here in the command center, kind of the speaker room area of the Build conference. So if you hear beeps and boops in the background, it's just the people that are doing the good work that keeps Build running. I'm sitting here actually with Zachary Pinter from Hulu, developer on the Hulu mobile team. How's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked because I contacted you guys after running the new Hulu Windows 8 application. I was enjoying it on my 30-inch monitor.
Yes.
Very much appreciating that. It's pretty awesome. And now I've got Hulu pretty much on every device I have.
We try to get on just about every device we can out there. So it's a bit of a journey, but it's a lot of fun in the meantime.
One of the things when I'm dealing with Hulu, because I've got it on my phone, I've got it on my tablet, I've got it on my Windows machine, I wonder, are you going to keep me from installing it too many places? I know with Netflix, sometimes they'll say, well, you have 5 or 6 machines registered. I assume Hulu will know if I'm trying to cheat you.
I think our largest concern there is number of simultaneous streams. Mm. So devices itself, if you were to look at my account in one of our panels, you'll see probably 100 different devices because I'm testing everything out there with my account. But that's never been something that we've really found a problem. It's just, hey, if you've got more than 2 or 3 simultaneous streams going at the same time, we're not going to let you open another.
Okay, that's good. So that makes me feel good because, like, if I get a new Surface, I'm going to want to put Hulu on it, but I'm going to think, well, I don't know if I
want
to
log in here. To put it on everything.
Okay, cool. So I can install it everywhere without fear.
Yes.
One of the things that I've noticed with Hulu lately is that the user interface is starting to look kind of the same everywhere. Like for a while there, it looked like one thing on my TiVo. I actually run Hulu on my TiVo as well. And looked one way on my PlayStation. But now it kind of looks, it's very organized. It's very clean in the user interface. And the Xbox 360 version looks real similar to my Windows 8 one. Is that on purpose?
Yeah. So actually, we've had a big push internally. It really culminated with the launch of what we call H2O, our new website design, where we've just got this visual refresh where it's a lot less metadata on the screen, a lot less text on the screen, and a lot more of really pronouncing the assets and the images and the content and making it easier to browse and easier to just, you know, go. A lot of times people come to Hulu and they want to find a very specific show, but we're also trying to, you know, we've got a great search functionality for that, but we also want to allow them to come and say, hey, what's something interesting to watch? And that's what we're pushing for with the new interface. You'll also see that. So Thorn, our Android tablet application,
Is that the code name?
Yeah, sorry.
No, this is good. Now we know the secret code name.
Yes, Thorn. I gave it away. So our Thorn application, it was the very first application to launch this new user interface. And it was sort of the prototype of it all, where we could see exactly how it works and how we want to lay things out and what some of the overall, information architecture of the application would be like. And then after that, we've launched H2O, the new website, and you can see the two look very, very similar. Now, when it came to Windows 8, we, of course, want to fit in with the platform. So instead of doing vertical scrolling and shelves, we do, we call them sections, but basically groups inside of .NET Grid View. And so it still looks very much like Hulu and has a very similar experience to the regular website in terms of information you can find and browse, but it also fits in very closely with the Windows 8 UI.
Where did those pictures come from? Because they look like screenshots, but they're so clear.
Yeah, so we do our own. We have a few different services where we can do show key art versus show art versus video like images. Mm-hmm. So for video images, we've got a ton of videos. A lot of times we'll just like take a good section of the video and make a screenshot of that. But if it comes to an actual show, if it's going to be on the main show page, mm-hmm. that's one image where we've, you know, we have designers who go in and make sure that all that, all those assets look good for every single show that we have.
Really?
And then we also have a condensed version of that for the tiles themselves. Mm-hmm. So you have the sort of master image for the show page that looks really good and really high resolution. You have the tile image for the shows, and then you have the video images for each particular episode.
So you might go to like, you know, Fox or NBC, and like they have like the press kit for like New Girl or whatever, and like here's all the graphics you're going to need, but then you're assembling those and doing all that work yourself.
Yes, I don't want to speak too much out of my domain there, but it's at least my understanding that we go in and manually edit that ourselves.
So then you as a developer, you're consuming this, you have like an API or a web API that you're pulling these from?
Yes, so if you go on GitHub, we released a project called Ectyper, E-C-T-Y-P-E-R. It had a different internal code name, but one of the things that project does is it basically sets up an image server, and it will take any URL you give it with some parameters like the size you want and the asset you want, and then various other image magic commands to, you know, maybe I want to clip it a certain way, and just translate those into running image magic on the command line and then caching that file and serving it to other requests. So we have a pretty decent API there for just saying, hey, any particular show or video, I want to get this asset at this size.
And you'll know that it looks good and it's correctly sized for the, what you're trying to do.
As long as we stick within the same aspect ratios, we're usually pretty good there. If we start chopping it a little bit, then we've got to be more careful. So a good example of that is the live tile that we do in Windows 8. If you, one of our first iterations, we wanted to put our Hulu logo every time they pinned a show to the start page.
Right.
But if we put it on the top, that would interfere with some show logos. If we put it on the bottom, then a show like The Colbert Report has the text on the bottom, so we would cover the label of the show, which wasn't so good. But we actually noticed if you compared the internal resolution of or the aspect ratio of our images with the aspect ratio of the live tiles, there's a bit of a gap on the left-hand side, or left or right-hand side. And we were able to use that with just a tiny bit of cropping so that we can get our logo in there and it doesn't interfere with any of the text on the image artwork.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of thought. I mean, are you having to like dynamically look at the, where the image is on them? Do you do any like kind of heuristics or anything to figure out that, oh, yeah, or do you just hard code like The Colbert Report puts it at the top?
So we don't have a lot of code to do that dynamically.
Like look at the image and like tell, I can see where their logo is?
It's more like dev iterations where we would do something and say, hey, does that look good? And then we would find a couple of examples of shows where that didn't work. So what we do now is by having that mismatch in aspect ratios, it's actually outside of the image. So we're not really covering the image at all. And we combine them together.
When we see these demos that the Microsoft guys do, they usually, you know, they look a lot like the file new project. When you say file new Windows Store project, you get a bunch of tiles, you get a designer involved to do some gradients, and you throw a bunch of good looking art up there. You obviously have all your designers that are back there doing that. You've got a web API that's returning all that stuff. So you've got all the art that's behind this. Is it literally just as like, is the Hulu application just a big old grid view and a huge play button? Or is there a lot more going on here? Because I want to understand the difference between the demos that they show of, hey, look, I made a video sharing app, and then a real one, because you've got millions of people using these things.
Sure. So at least to the application design, we're definitely doing a lot. I wouldn't say like custom as far as the framework doesn't support it, but a lot of custom UI ourselves there. A good example of that is our search results page. So if you do a search, you've got mixed matched, you know, a lot of different types of content, where you can get, not only like shows where we will show the show image and then the first four episodes and the first four clips and things like that. We'll also show movies that match up, but they're a separate section, right? So it's not like all looking the same or in the same sort of standard grid view grouping. We have different layouts for each type of search result that we can return on that page. Mm-hmm. We also have editorial trace. So if I search for something like family, I might get a curated section like family flicks with all the movie tiles. And that's a different aspect ratio, right? Because we're showing the poster art mm-hmm. instead of the video artwork, which is 16:9. So we basically combine all those things together, and yet everything on there is part of the same sort of selection metaphor where you can check mark one and it unchecks the other. Mm. So doing something like that really isn't quite supported by default in the framework, but the framework gives you enough hooks that we were able to make it work, and it turned out really nice.
Interesting. So then that means that, you know, you say family and you're going to get a section, you can get a group, you can get a movie, you can get clips, you can get an episode, you can get a show with the name family. The user needs to think, hey, it's a big, beautiful grid full of things, in some ways delineated. Mm-hmm. But underneath, you've got, you know, a dozen different kinds of search results that were returned.
And that was actually something that we couldn't do in our earlier applications. We didn't really have an API for that. But as part of the H2O launch, our new website, that API was added so that the website could have these really nice and beautiful search results instead of just a grid of tiles. Mm-hmm. And then come Windows 8, we did a first iteration on it. It was a grid of tiles. It worked, but it wasn't that, you know, wonderful, right? So we went back and rethought about it mm-hmm. and thought, hey, we could do something a lot nicer if we use the same API that the site's using now. And through that, that's what we've landed at.
I assume at some point, like the very first time that someone thought, let's do a Windows 8 app, mm-hmm. somebody did go file new project, store, okay, bound a bunch of images to it and said, yes, here we go, we're on our way.
Yeah, definitely. So we were able to get, you know, some rough versions of the app out there really quick, like at least internal builds. Mm-hmm. It was quite nice. And actually, our initial sort of MVP build we had done at least 3 months ago.
MVP, minimally viable product.
Yeah. And that particular build, it didn't have the nicer search results. It didn't have as nice of a bottom bar, and the top navigation wasn't as flushed out and mm-hmm. so on. But it did the job and it looks pretty good. And by having that out early, one, it gave us some breathing room for development time, but two, it let us get preloaded on a variety of, vendors. So yeah, we had that first build. It wasn't as fleshed out as we would like the end result to be. It didn't have all the features, but we got pretty far in a short amount of time. So
it sounds like the first 80% is really, really fast. Mm-hmm. And then it's really just tweaking and tweaking.
All the refinement. Yeah. I spent days, with our design team where one or two of the designers would just come by and sit at my desk and be sort of live coding with me of, hey, can we try that, moving that down a little bit, or can we tweak the opacity here, or mm-hmm. we need a shadow on that text.
Really just sitting there with you and you're live exactly. coding while they're designing.
Yeah, and then I had to go in after the fact and clean up my code because I did a bunch of hacks here and there to right. make sure that I could try it out while the
designer was doing. But you were able to make those changes. Now, did you do those in the WPF designer, in Notepad, or in Blend?
So I did it in the Visual Studio XAML editor. We don't really use the designer view too much. It's nice and it makes for a great feature when you match it, but then you have to do more work to set up your sample data sources. And you also particularly with an application like Hulu, the majority of our UI is driven server side. So, you know, setting up that sample data source, fetching the correct layout from the server, getting through with all the login stuff. I mean, it's not impossible, but it mm-hmm. wasn't really worth it for us to be able to, like, you know, drag a grid around. It was easier to just edit that with the code.
Mm-hmm. How many different XAML pages do you have? Because I think that we could agree that Hulu is a competent and reasonably sized app. It's not, like, immensely complex, but it's also not immensely simple. Mm-hmm. How many XAML pages are there?
So, a little bit of background on that. We don't have, say, a TV page or a movies page or something like that. Our two main pages in the application, maybe we could find a better name for it, but it's horizontal page and expanded page. So horizontal page is the sideways scrolling page mm-hmm. where you have like groups of content. And that page, then gets filled with what we call, again, sections or groups. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole list of section templates that define like what different sections can look like.
And are those different XAML pages?
Snippets.
Or different snippets?
Yeah, templates.
Okay. Are there different files physically on disk, or is it all part of one giant, larger resource?
So there's a resource dictionary that contains all of our section templates. And then we also have a resource dictionary for our tile templates inside those sections. But yeah, so we basically have a collection of Legos, right? And then the server side information architecture, like the way we define how the application is laid out server side uses those Legos and rearranges them in interesting ways. So we can say, oh, I want, a query that shows TV videos by popularity, but I want it, you know, with the standard section layout with the tiles as the first two tiles big. Or we could switch it that, oh, I want it to be 16 small tiles, or I want this particular one to be poster art.
Help me understand that relationship a little bit more. It sounds like you're saying that you're getting layout information from the server.
Yeah. So
why isn't the server just focused on data and then the client make those decisions?
So the server doesn't tell us like, oh, I want this 60 padding to the left, or I want this to be this particular font. It doesn't do any of that, but it does tell us that, hey, I want, you know, this data source to be the very first thing after, you know, our masthead image, right? So it tells us which section I want to be on the homepage in the most prominent order and what query against our servers we're going to use to fill that section up. And then also, like, we have a few layout concepts, like, what sort of grid layout do I want? Do I want it to be one big tile and then the rest of them small, or do I want it to be two big tiles and the rest of them small?
I see. So if I understand correctly, you've got kind of this cafeteria plan of all the different X number of layouts that one could potentially use. Exactly. And then, I don't know, the master of programming can be in the back there and he can change what I see as the user when I launch it. It could be like a giant picture of the girl from New Girl and then some featured movie that she's in. He can control that.
Exactly.
And it might look entirely different another day.
Exactly. Very, very much so. So if we want to, say, promote a lot of our new kids content, we can go in and we can actually change what the top app bar says server side, and we can add an entire new kids section, and we can organize it by, you know, what the most popular shows are or however we want to group up the kids content. So that gives our server side team a lot of flexibility in, you know, rearranging content or adding new content to the website that doesn't require everybody to update their applications immediately.
So that's interesting. You just said the website. So they're thinking about this in terms of, are they targeting clients? Or are they thinking about the Hulu as the client? And it doesn't really matter whether it's on an Android or a Windows 8 or a web.
So, right now, it's not as unified, right? If we develop a kids section on Hulu.com, we're probably going to use the same ideas and the same flow, but develop it in a different definition file for the Android app and a different definition file for the Windows 8 app. Mm-hmm. Similar concepts, but different setups right now. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm really excited about on the back end is I'm working with some other guys on our team to consolidate that so we can share a lot of the layout between applications. And basically we're working on just a sort of mini domain specific language where we can define what the Hulu experience looks like. And then on top of that, we can get, you know, application specific adjustments. So a good example is a phone interface might not want as many filtering options as a tablet interface because it doesn't have as much real estate on the screen to show those filtering options.
So you're kind of keeping it dry across all of these different things.
Exactly, yeah. Removing some past pain points and really getting a nice system out there so that, you know, we can share the main layout of our application across sites and then further optimize it with some personalization tools as well. So if we find that somebody's really into science fiction, maybe that would promote itself more prominently on their home screen than somebody who's into a lot of cooking shows.
Mm-hmm. How did you make the decision to go with C# and XAML versus using JavaScript and HTML for the Windows 8 app?
So there's, as I understand it, a lot of the benefits of the JavaScript and HTML is that it can bring in outside developers who are maybe familiar with writing basic websites and, you know, give them a lot of tools that are familiar. Mm-hmm. But for us, it wouldn't give us much benefit in like code sharing or anything like that. Like we're not going to share JavaScript files with the main website on that. So we're going to be writing it from from scratch anyways, and we're going to do a lot of heavy work with the media player framework in general. So we would have to do that in probably C# or C++ as well, even if we did the HTML and JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I've just had in the past a really good experience with XAML and C# through WPF and Silverlight and Windows Phone 7 at previous companies I've worked at. So I think all of those combined together, we basically had a group consensus that we should do the XAML and C# route. And we've been very happy with it since.
Really?
Yeah.
When you're doing some things at large resolutions, the first thing that I noticed is I have three monitors, a 20, 24, and a 30. And as I move around, you know, things resize pretty well. I'm able to actually kind of window and then page up and page down and move Hulu around, which is cool. But I'm noticing just in general, Windows Store apps, not all of them think about these giant resolutions. Mm-hmm. And I've also heard about DPI being an issue as well. I haven't personally seen that, but I understand that there's three different DPIs that you have to think about. Mm-hmm. How much thought did you put into as a Windows 8 app, like you might run was it 1366 by 768?
Sure.
Which is the minimum for snapping. And then all the way up to, you know, 2048 and beyond. How do you manage the layout there and resolution issues?
So, we use a full bleed masthead, which is 90% of the width of the screen. And that approach actually makes it look really nice on the majority of devices that we work with. Mm-hmm. It gives us enough where we can have just a little bit of the content peeking through on the right side, but the image looks really big and pronounced and full on every resolution we test it at. So even when you do visit a 30-inch monitor to look at the application, you'll see that big artwork there on the screen. When it comes to the tiles to the right of that, we have a maximum of 4 vertical rows. We would like to do either more rows or bigger tiles for extremely high resolution websites. But right now, that's enough of an edge case. And the approach we use where we stick to 4 vertical rows and center it vertically, it seems to catch the majority of devices outside of developer machines. So again, it's a trade-off. Another thing we would also like to do is have better support for portrait mode, which right now we just disable in the application. And combined with that, a lot of developers who like to have, you know, say a 24-inch widescreen monitor flipped vertically. If you were to look at that with our application right now, it would work, but it'd be a little bit weird with the clipping of the masthead image.
And I realize that a 16:9 high definition stream doesn't lend itself well to a snapped view, but I have to give you credit for letting me watch The Daily Show in a snapped view. Even though it was kind of weird because it was letterboxed, I could do it. And I was like, awesome. Because with some applications like the store, they just put the logo. And I fully expected Hulu to just say, no, we're not going to let you do that. So I was able to watch while snapped, and I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, SnapView, it actually hasn't been too bad. We've got a little bit more work that we want to do with our video SnapView. We'll probably move that video image up further in the screen. So if you are on a tablet and you bring up your keyboard, it doesn't overlap on top of the video. So there's a few optimizations we can do there, and we might include some extra metadata, but we're pretty happy with how it turned out, especially for the first released out there.
The 30-inch monitor thing brings up some really interesting questions about what the user's expectation is. I have a 30-inch monitor at my desk, so I'll be 2 feet away from it. I would like to see a whole bunch of pictures, right? Show me beautiful. You have beautiful art. Show me more. But if I'm sitting on my couch and I've got my 30-inch or 42-inch monitor, then I'm going to want to see big, giant, beautiful art. So then you start bringing into some really interesting things that I don't think you've done yet, but you could, which is like semantic zoom, where I could zoom out and see like all the categories and then zoom, you know. Then I'm trying to do like Hulu Minority Report style. So take that back to the designers and tell them that I want to be able to do that and zoom in and zoom out. So I feel like the entire catalog is at my fingertips.
Yeah, that would be great. And honestly, we do have, so basically it's like a toggle right now. We have horizontal page and horizontal page with zoom. And we have horizontal page with zoom turned off right now because, at least as we understood it early on in development, and I've actually learned something really interesting this build that I'm going to use to go back and change that. But the semantic zoom works best when the outside component is a grid view. And we want to have a lot of customizability of what our groups look like. And the group style selector of the grid view isn't giving us that flexibility right now. So we played with either having a grid view of grid views, where each item at the grid view is just a horizontal stack panel in a virtualized horizontal stack panel. Mm-hmm. And then each section is what we want is another grid view. But when we did the grid view of grid views, it made one of the problems that's been plaguing us right now is we get a fatal execution engine error in the application where it's just a hard native crash, cryptic error code. The best we can investigate on it is that, it looks like maybe there's some native code that's holding a reference to an item that's been garbage collected and gets an event handler and then tries to call it and that object is no longer there.
Weird.
So a weird thing there. And at least on the forums that I've read and through our contacts at Microsoft, there's going to be a patch or already has been a patch to address some of those issues. Mm-hmm. But, that particular random exception that just crashed our application, you know, as we were navigating through it or going from page to page, we just randomly get crashes. That's why we had semantic zoom turned off. It's not that we couldn't make it work. It's mm-hmm. just that we were getting
some weird
a bunch
thing.
Of random behavior there. And it's not necessarily to say that that's even the fault of semantic zoom. It's not. It's just
well,
that
it's some
it was
obscure
more pronounced.
In edge case where you're done some interaction with some interaction with some interaction, right? It's the
exactly.
It's Spolsky's law of abstraction.
Yeah. So what we've done instead for right now with this current build is we have just a regular items control instead of a grid view. Mm-hmm. And that items control is providing each of our inner grid views, with a virtualizing stack panel. And that approach works, but it doesn't have semantic zoom. That mm-hmm. said, there was a great talk today about the XAML, list views. And they showed exactly how to implement the isemantic zoom info interface, which I had seen before, but there wasn't really a lot of documentation around it early on. So with that in mind, it looks like we can just subclass items control, implement the interface ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, instead of having a grid view of grid views, we have an items control of grid views and we support semantic zoom.
Does stuff like that make coming back, like coming to things like build, like worthwhile?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, is that an example? Like, oh, dude, I can go back right now and fix that thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's there's been a few situations like that. One that I really loved, and maybe it's just our fault for not finding the documentation somewhere, but debug settings dot and show overdraw map heat map.
Okay.
Right? You can set that in your app.xaml.cs, mm-hmm. and it will basically turn all of your UI elements into red boxes and show you how they overlap each other. And the darker the red is, the more the GPU is overdrawing. And make your performance sluggish.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. That alone has been worth the trip where we can go in now and we can actually pinpoint a few situations where we're really killing the graphics performance on mm-hmm. ARM devices because of that overdraw. Now we know where to find it.
So cool.
Stuff like that has been really good. I do find it's been a little bit hit or miss with the conferences. It's like I either go to one extreme or the other and finding the spot right in the middle where it's enough technical content that it's useful, but it's not so so inner where it's something that I would never use.
Right. Like it's fun to see like Mark Rusinovich like debug some crazy internal Windows thing, but how often do you go that deep?
Yeah. And so I think with that, either going insanely heavy into the native C++ code, which our application doesn't really use, or being the very light introductory talks about how to use XAML and C#, you know, finding that like perfect middle one where it's all the technical content and immediately useful has been a little bit challenging, but we can always go back and view the videos of the highest rated ones, which I think will be good. And we can, you know, also the few classes that we have been to that have really met that mark have been awesome. Mm-hmm. Just finding that overdraw heat map, I think, will be very valuable.
And have you been able to interact with these guys? Are you grabbing the guys and gals that are presenting and then talking to them afterwards? Do you get access to these people?
You know, I try to, but all the really good talks are crowded at the end with people waiting in line. And then you don't want to be the guy who's going over some really in-depth thing and like getting a lot of back and forth discussion about it while, you know, 10 people are behind you.
Get in there and say, just seriously, this is a tip. Can I have a card? Get their alias. Just say, can I have your alias? And then email them.
That's a good idea.
Just like, hey, pardon me. I know you got a lot of people who, can I get your alias? They'll tell you their alias. And then boom, now you have their email address and then you've got that relationship.
And they don't mind you asking questions?
Dude, they do not. Seriously. I mean, I was joking with Scott Gu. I was encouraging people, you know, not to email the vice president that, you know, they have, you know, please send me the codes because mm-hmm. he's just going to forward it to me and then I'm going to forward it to somebody else. But no, seriously, if someone is presenting to you about their feature and they love that feature and that feature is going to help you, or you think that feature could be made better, or there's a problem with that feature, they absolutely want to hear from you.
Awesome.
So do that.
Yeah.
Do that. Find the heat map person and let's talk to that guy.
Sounds good.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Zachary Pinter, for talking to me today from Hulu. Everyone can check that out in the store. It's live now.
It is. It's out in the store now.
Very, very cool. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.